I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB with Blaise Desjardins at the Boston Symphony Orchestra, now the holder of a new title at the BSO. It's principal cello. Blaise, thanks for taking a few minutes out of what's probably a pretty busy week to talk with me about all of it.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, Brian.
The press release that the press office sent out kindly that described your new appointment says that you're the 14th principal cellist of the Boston Symphony in the last 137 years. The stat that I kind of dug around a little bit and found that I think might be even more interesting is that you're only the fourth principal cellist in the last 99 years. And so this is a job, of course, more than half of that held by the legendary Jules Eskin.
Yes.
And he was a friend of yours and your principal for all the entire time you have been in the orchestra.
Yes.
So we can get to Jules specifically later. But the fact remains, this is a job that people hold on to and they make their lives out of. And so it's a thrill that you have this job now. But let's talk a little bit of basics and definitions and talk about what principal cello really means. You play all the solos, that's what we see in the audience, but what goes into being the principal cello of a major orchestra like this?
Well, I'm just getting started, so I may have more things to tell you in a few months.
But I'll check back.
I think, you know, so of course, aside the solos, I feel I'm sort of the main conduct, you know, between the conductor and the section. So I'm so close to the conductor, it's very easy to feel anything they want to do musically. And so I hope I can sort of try to convey that also to the section by the way I move, by the way I play, and sort of help everyone this way. Of course, you know, over a full season, I have to prepare a lot of bowings, make sure the parts are ready for everyone, that nothing is strange, that, you know, we don't have to have too many questions coming up during rehearsals. And I guess I, you know, I hope everyone gets along well, and I keep that going as well.
But to be clear, for anyone who doesn't know, you're not the one who determines where people sit in the section. That's actually done through auditions.
Done through auditions, time in the orchestra. We have a personal manager whose job it is to do this. So I don't do that.
You don't have to manage the party seating or anything like that, which is good.
No.
But also on a potentially more technical note, when we say bowings, that means where the bow literally goes up and down while you play the music. And tell me what a big difference that can make. Like, why does that have to be straightened out by you beforehand?
Well, I mean, sometimes it can help, let's say, with the phrasing. If the bowing goes a certain direction, it's more natural to play that way. So then it helps everyone. Or sometimes we have to match another section who chose to that bowing, and then we have to do it. Or sometimes it's just comfort. You know, if we have a lot of bars in one bow and it seems a bit hard, well, I might want to split it somewhere so everyone is comfortable. So it's a bit of everything. Some artistic decisions and some just comfort decisions.
And in a program like this, which we'll get more into the specifics of this all Brahms program in a few minutes, but these are both pieces that the BSO plays on a regular basis.
Yes.
How much can the bowing change in Brahms symphonies or in a Brahms piano concerto from one conductor or one week to the next?
Not much.
Not too much. Okay.
Yeah, this week is very easy. It's, you know, we play those pieces so much,
yeah.
The bowings, we know them. It's Yeah, it just rolls by itself.
Yeah. And what was the audition like for this job? As much as you want to say about that, it's a kind of a private affair, really, when it comes to orchestras choosing their personnel. But how would you describe the process from your point of view and the experience of doing the audition?
Well, I think anyone who did auditions will tell you it's really, really hard. I mean, I think especially mentally, it's just pretty harrowing. I know when I took my audition, I played my first round. That's 3:15 p.m. My last time playing was at 8:15 p.m. in the evening. And so between that, you know, I played five rounds. And, you know, you wait and then you go play and then you wait for a result, you go play. It's different thing every time. The list of music to prepare is huge, not to mention, you know, of course, you know how important the audition is for your sort of future. So it's very stressful. So I think it's mostly the way I look at it. It's very much a mental game, and you know, I'm sure some people who play very, very well will just fall apart on that day. And to me, since I took my section audition 10 years ago, since then I learned how to play golf, and I think it's very much like golf. So you have to play your own game. It's like you can't try to make birdies after birdies, because some people will make bogeys. So you stick to your game plan, and you try to stay solid and also to play very musically and be yourself, and you just hope for the best. But you can't control what the committee will decide, of course. So,
and that's actually that's not a lighthearted comparison. I mean, I think a lot of players, as I've come to know, really do take lessons from these other sports or whatever else, and they apply them to their lives as musicians. Now for those who have jobs where they basically went and sat at a desk and did an interview, or maybe at a committee table, something like that. Auditioning as a musician is a little bit different, because you're given a list of music that you have to be responsible for knowing. And then, was it like most auditions that I've seen, where you're then kind of on the moment, it's, okay, now play this one. Okay, now play this one.
Yes, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And hopefully you want to convince them with each one of them. So that's the hard part. And also, maybe something I learned over the years is also show a variety of things that you can do with your playing. So when I sat on committees before, you know, as a committee member, sometimes you hear someone with a big sound, and then they have a big sound all the time, and then you get bored, you know. So it's not all about having a big sound or having a beautiful tone. If it's the same for Brahms and Haydn and Mozart and Shostakovich, then at some point you sort of tune off. So it's very much like a performance. You know, you have to grab the public's attention and just keep them interested. So,
but if golf were done this way, you would start at hole number one, but then you might say, oh, we're going to go to hole number five now. And then we're going to backtrack to hole number three. Oh, but you know what? We'd really like to see you do hole number 11.
That's a great comparison.
Because you don't know quite what to prepare yourself for quite next. You just have to be ready to pivot on a dime, do anything.
Yes.
Yeah, stressful.
It is, yeah.
But that's why they do it, right? Because when you are in a position like the one you hold, the amount of work and the number of circumstances you're in which you have to keep your cool, is probably beyond most people's understanding. So
yes, and you know, like you were mentioning about sports, it's actually something I got interested into when I joined the orchestra. I think I'm a much better performer today than I was 10 years ago. And I read a lot about musical performance, about sports performance, all the mental, you know, things that go on in a performer's mind, because we are performers. Like, somehow you can forget when you're in school, you're practicing in your room, and you love the music and it's great, and but then you have to go perform. And so how do you perform your best, you know, when you have to? And so that's, I think it will always be a work in progress. I can't say like, oh, I found the solution. But I think if you really work on it, it's really very mental, then you get better at it.
Yeah, yeah. I took a little trip down memory lane, and I looked back to an interview that we did in 2010, you came to WGBH and you played in our studio. And so you had only been in the orchestra for a couple of years at that point. And one of the things you told me was that your first year was really stressful, because you were learning a lot of stuff that the orchestra, most people in the orchestra, done for years. They were relaxed about things, but you just had to learn these parts really quickly, because the pace of activity in a major orchestra is just nonstop. It made me wonder, now, as you look ahead to your first year as principal, how different do you see the pieces coming up? Now that you know them, you know the pieces, at least most of what you're going to be playing, but how different does it feel now to be the principal?
It may not be as bad, actually, as my first year. I mean, the biggest difference will be the solos, actually, to be heard on my own. That's the newest thing, let's say, in my life now. But of course, after 10 years in the orchestra, I know a lot of the repertoire already. So I in that sense, you know, the repertoire might not be as overwhelming than 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. What I remember about your coming to the United States from France is that you came to study with Bernard Greenhouse, and you've also studied with others here in the States. How do you think that your lessons way back then prepared you for this moment?
You know, it's funny, because one of my most prized possessions is a letter that Mr. Greenhouse wrote to make me come to the States, to support me for a scholarship. And And he wrote that, you know, if they helped me, you know, I had a good chance to have a solo career in the States. And it's funny now, I really wish he was here now to know. But I think your question sort of brings me back also to auditions, because I think I see a lot of students, you know, worrying, how am I going to play that day? Or, you know, I have to practice as hard as I can, you know, before. And actually, I didn't touch my cello the day before the audition because I was so tired from the week of orchestra. And I heard actually from my teacher from Paris, Philippe Muller, that that's a trick that his own teacher, André Navarra, used to give his students, to not play before a competition or to go to the movies or change your mind. But the reason I'm talking about this is because I think what really makes you win a job is all the work you did way before. It's not even the few months before. Of course, you have to do your normal practicing, but it's how you learn how to make music, all your technique that you learned years and years ago, that sort of becomes maybe more fruitful that day. But it's what really gets you the job was done much before you actually take the audition.
Bernard Greenhouse, most well known for years and years as a chamber musician with Beaux-Arts Trio. How important was his approach now to the how you approach playing as an orchestral principal player? Those are sort of different realms, or are they as different as I might be framing them?
I don't know if I want to compare chamber music playing against orchestra playing. For me, it's just music making, you know. And so I know Bernard Greenhouse influenced my playing tremendously, and I think he had a way of explaining not technique, but what he called musical technique. So how to make something beautiful and why it sounded beautiful, why what you did with your left hand and what you did with your right hand, how it created this emotion. And so I learned a great deal from that, and that's very helpful, you know, also preparing for auditions or any performances where you know technically what you have to do for things to sound beautiful. So, you know, I will live with his lessons forever, and I also learned from so many other teachers and cellists, and I really have to say that I learned so much from my orchestra colleagues since I've been here. I learned so much just hearing the quality of players that were not cellists, so like hearing the clarinet, the trombones in the orchestra. I learned so much, and then I was thinking the other day, being principal, I almost feel like I stole one little thing from each of my cello colleagues that I could tell you. I like how he does this, and I like how she does that, and so I'm a bit like maybe a sponge with tentacles. You know, I try to grab whatever I feel, you know, is interesting about someone's playing, and try to incorporate it in my own playing. So I learned a lot since I'm here.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I did want to ask, you know, what does your experience in the BSO teach you? So I'm going to refine my question since you already got to it. The BSO, among major orchestras, maintains an identity in its sound that, you know, only a handful, I think, around the world really can say that they have a distinctive sound. The strings, the way the strings play in the BSO is kind of not like almost any other orchestra I know. What's the secret? What are you guys doing? When you look at Steven at viola playing principal viola, or anyone else, Halden playing principal second violin, what is it collectively you guys are doing, and now you're very much responsible for doing on a section basis to make that BSO sound?
Well, it's interesting because I'm sure there are common things, but there are also multiple personalities in the orchestra. So I don't know. I mean, if I think about the string sound of the BSO, I think about warmth and roundness, beautiful legato. I think it has a lot to do also with the hall we play in, which is just amazing and just lets you relax. I think, you know, I'm always thinking, if I was, you know, working every day in a modern hall that's too dry, I would play differently. You know, it would not allow me to relax. And so I think the sound of the orchestra goes together with the hall.
And there's something that happens from time to time as conductors come in and go. Guest conductors, Andres is here for about half the season, something like that. But lots of conductors like to move the sections around on stage. So for instance, this week, The violas are on the outside of the stage with Maestro Haitink, and the violins are where you would normally find them, but that means the cellos are sort of in the middle of the stage. Other arrangements we can get into, but does any of that matter to you? Is there one arrangement on the stage that you like more than others?
Yes, I like the one with Maestro Nelson's.
With the cellos outside,
just simply because I have more space. There's just, if I'm on the outside, which I will be now, there's just no one on my left. There's just plenty of space, and you can hear yourself a bit better than if you're inside the orchestra.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't say I'm suffering this week because I'm more inside. It's just fine.
Right. No suffering. On this stage, there's not really any suffering. It's all pretty good. But yes. But yeah, I can see what you mean. Now, the principal cellist job also means that you'll be a member of, well, you are now a member of the Boston Symphony Chamber Players. Mm-hmm. And tell me how that component of your job works. I mean, maybe you're still learning yourself, but you've seen it work, you know, with Jules over the years. And so how do the chamber players fit into this job?
Well, I mean, that too, I'm just getting started. So I think my first chamber music-related event will be actually in Germany. We're going to Leipzig in June to play some concerts there. So it's only a small contingent of the chamber players, but that will be my first concerts with them. And then, of course, at the beginning of Tanglewood, Schumann Piano Quintet. But yeah, we'll have concerts regularly in Boston. And I really look forward to that. I think chamber music is really actually what I learned once I came to Boston. When I was in Paris, I did a lot of solo repertoire and competitions and such. And when I arrived here, I rediscovered the Brahms sextets and the Beethoven quartets, and I was amazed. And I just played chamber music all the time with my friends. So it means a lot, and I think it's really good to have those sort of connections with colleagues closely, which is actually also what we have with the Boston Cello Quartet, just to work together in a more intimate manner, so we really know each other's playing, we can grow together. And I think that's also what chamber music is about, is to exchange emotions, idea, and keep growing, which is, if I had to say, the one thing that attracted me to this job is to keep growing. That's why I'm here. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the cello quartet, your creation with three of your colleagues from the BSO. And does your new position have any implications for what might be possible with the cello quartet, or do we just continue to enjoy the cello quartet as we have over the last several years?
I think you will continue to enjoy it as it has been so far. Yes.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Let's talk about this week. And it's hard to think of a better week to step into being principal cello than an all Brahms program. His writing for cello is so, so gorgeous. And for this particular concert, this solo in the piano concerto, the second piano concerto, is a landmark. It's a, what do we call it? It's one of the beacons of orchestral solo cello writing.
Yes.
So what is the feeling now of stepping in with this orchestra that you know so well, your friends and colleagues, and playing this music, especially in the solo for the Brahms piano concerto?
Well, I mean, it's a bit like if you want to learn how to swim and you just jump in the pool. That's like you play the biggest solo on your first concert series. So it's very exciting. I mean, I, you know, preparing the audition, of course, I worked on it a lot. I played it a lot at home and listened to a lot of recordings, you know. Played with some recordings, you know, just to get used to it. And now here I am at Symphony Hall with the actual BSO, you know, playing and Maestro Haitink, and so it's very, very special. And of course, you know, I know Jules was very famous for his interpretation of that solo, and of course I won't be a copy of Jules. I can't. It would not be worth it. So it'll be different, but hopefully it will be me. I love this music very much, and it's for me very special to have my debut with Maestro Haitink as well. He's one of my best memories as a young cello player. Maybe I think it was about 15 years ago in Europe with the European Union Youth Orchestra, and he conducted a tour with Mahler 6, and that just blew my mind. And that's one of the big reasons I am playing orchestra now, is because the emotions I felt during those concert tours were really enormous. And so for me to work with him that closely today in Boston when I'm starting this new position is really very, very special.
So to clarify, you were in the European Community Youth Orchestra and Bernard Haitink was conducting the orchestra.
Yes.
When you were a teenager.
Yes, I could show you. I have a picture of us.
It's not that I don't believe you.
I can prove it.
No, really. Well, oh gosh, this is amazing. That's what an amazing connection. Mm-hmm. And so I have to ask then, what? Tell me about Bernard Haitink, and tell me why it is that the BSO is, from your perspective, having experienced his work that long ago, what has made his work with the BSO so fruitful? He's really one of the most beloved conductors this orchestra has had in the last however many years. I mean, everybody loves it when he's here. What do you see as what Maestro Haitink is doing with the orchestra to get such great results?
Well, it's hard for me to say if it's only with our orchestra. I think it's just the way he conducts everywhere he goes, which is, you know, a very refined style. And also what really shocked me when we did Mahler 6 15 years ago was the length of the phrases and how it felt like things were taking shape very slowly, very gradually, and then you get to the end of a phrase or a section and your mind is blown because you finally realize where you were going. And so I think, and all that with very minimal gestures, actually. And so I think, yeah, there's a refinement and a sense of direction that's very, very unique. And actually, even the way, you know, we do the cello solo this week is very different from, you know, from how Jules played it with George Sell, or, you know, it's just a totally different interpretation. So it's very interesting. I really enjoy it.
Well, and that phenomenon that you talk about of only realizing when you've gotten to the end of something what has just happened, you know, you get the full picture. No better music for that than Brahms, right? Because the architecture of all of Brahms's orchestral pieces is so important. And so yes, I understand that feeling that you're taken along, and on you're following Maestro Haitink, and what he's doing seems like small moments, but then they add up.
Yes.
To something really huge.
Yes, it's very much like our architecture. You know, you feel the building going up, and then once it's all done, you're like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked a little bit in the past about the conductor you're working for most of the time. That's Andras. And talk about what it is that, I mean, as I said, we've talked about Andras before, but what do you see in Andras now that he's come to the end of, I think this was his fourth season now, and how is the relationship with Andras and the orchestra maybe different or more, how has it grown since he came along those 4 years ago?
Well, I think we're probably very comfortable with each other now. I mean, we know each other much better. He trusts us and we trust him. So that's the best thing you can get, you know, between an orchestra and a conductor. I've been a huge fan of his since his first rehearsal. I have two big posters signed by him in my living room. So I'm glad I got the job so I can keep them there. But I'm really a huge fan of his, and he's just not only a great musician but a great human being. And ultimately, actually, that's, you know, that's what music is all about. It's about humanity and sharing things and sharing emotions. And so I think he's very good at bringing us to that place, make us forget a bit about how we play our instruments, how we prepare for concerts, but just to live in the moment and really connect with the music. And he's really, really good at that.
Well, I so appreciate your time. Blaise Desjardins, congratulations. I have to tell you, when I heard the news that you had won the principal cello job, I was just absolutely thrilled.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
And I'm glad to hear you in Brahms this week. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.